Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, this is an interview we've been after for a while. Kavanaugh's jealous, so that makes me happy. Sean and RJ on the home of America's team, 105.3 The Fan. Warren Sharp is Choppy's dream, basically. Analytics, data that other NFL teams use and request. He has a book out that's been the number one bestseller in football for almost 3 weeks on Amazon. It is the 2019 football preview, and Warren Sharp is joining us on the home of the Cowboys on the buyersafety.com hotline. Warren, congrats on all the success. Thanks for joining us. Where are the Cowboys in terms of analytics?
That's a good question. I think that they may utilize them. I truthfully don't know. I've consulted with a few teams. I've had seminars with some others, and the Cowboys were not one of those teams. So I actually don't know internally how much they utilize them. Certainly, some of their decision making appears to be focused and centric around the talent that they have. And so they run the ball a little bit more often than analytics would suggest. But there are certainly other elements at play, like I write about in the book, their decision-making in the third quarter of games, that leads me to believe that if they were utilizing analytics enough, they would notice an inefficiency at this particular quarter and would make the requisite adjustments to their game planning to avoid continuing that pattern. So I don't know the answer to your question, but it certainly isn't enough to my liking. I'll put it that way.
So basically, they get off to nice starts in the first quarter, and then a lot of things go opposite in the third quarter, because Cowboy fans always say, and we agree, man, it doesn't look like they've made any adjustments coming out of halftime. So it's basically opposite first versus third quarter, and how?
Okay, well, so in the first half, the Dallas Cowboys are better than average with the yards they face on third down. On average, like the yards to go, if they get put into a third down, they're better than average. And they have a conversion rate on those third downs that's better than average. But in the third quarter, the Cowboys have the third worst average yards to go on third down, far worse than average. And they convert third down at a 24% clip, the third worst conversion rate in the NFL. So what the Cowboys should have looked at is why? Why are we getting put into so many third and long situations at the third worst rate in the NFL in the third quarter? What are we doing differently? Because we're above average in the first half of games. The answer is they go conservative on first down. First down dictates oftentimes what happens on third down. And in the first half of games, they're nearly passing the ball 50% of the time on first down. In the third quarter, they're nearly running the ball 60% of the time on third down. Their success rate on their first down play calls in that third quarter is only 39%. It was 47% in the first half. So they are causing it themselves. It's not that the defense has adjusted to do things differently. On first down, they are intentionally taking the ball out of the quarterback's hand. Those plays average more yards per play. They're putting it in the running back's hand, as good as Zeke is. Those plays are not going to average the same yards per play. And they are voluntarily, essentially, putting upon themselves the fact that they're going to be put into more third and long situations. It's very frustrating as an analyst because it's their own choosing. Jason Garrett, as a play caller, was choosing on first down because, remember, guys, first and second down, you can do whatever you want. your third down are a reactionary down. Typically, the second half is a reactionary half. But on first down, he could call a pass if he wanted to. He's choosing to call runs, and basically he's choosing to set his team up in these more often third and long situations, and therefore they're not being successful. And you saw what happened in the playoff game. They gave up a lead. They led at halftime, scored zero third quarter points, and had to rally from behind for the win. So it's not as if they learned anything through the course of the season. They continue doing the same pattern into the postseason.
Warren Sharp at Sharp Football on Twitter. Get the book. It's amazing. One of my heroes.
Are you happy right now?
I can't stand up right now. You have no idea how happy I am.
Warren, I learned what counting numbers were in an epic fight we had 2 years ago because he was quoting some of your info and he goes, I don't subscribe to your petty counting numbers. So he's blushing right now.
I wanted you to debunk some myths for us if you can. Because there are fans out there say you got to run the ball, you got to stop the run. You got to run the ball to set up play action. Explain that, because I know that's kind of a myth out there that you don't have to run the ball to set up play action.
No, you absolutely don't. And here's the good thing, and this is why Dallas needs to get onto the forefront of analytics as quickly as possible, because we are learning so much over the last few years. You know, other sports are well ahead of the NFL in terms of understanding analytics, but with player tracking data now becoming more public and teams being able to access the player tracking data from other teams, we're getting new discoveries. And what we're finding out, number one, is that no matter how often, how many times you're running play action, those linebackers get impacted virtually the same, regardless of how infrequently or frequently you're using play action. The whole goal of a play action play is to convince the linebackers after the snap that it might be a run. And if you convince them, you will see that they will either hesitate or even move slightly forward towards the line of scrimmage. And that's all you need for that play to have, for that play action, that fake handoff that then becomes a pass play, to have made its mark and allow your receivers to gain a slight edge. What we're noticing is that play action in the first quarter is actually more efficient than play action in the second quarter or the third quarter. It doesn't matter how many times you're running play action, it still gives the desired effect. No team has yet to, in the NFL, even the most pass-heavy teams, has yet to utilize play action so often and run the ball so infrequently to cause play action to have no impact on the linebackers. So maybe we would get to the point, if a team went 99% pass and never ran the ball, that linebackers might learn, when we're playing this team, we're not going to bite on play action. But for now, we're not to that point. We're nowhere close. And linebackers instinctively, ever since they were in high school, have been taught when that quarterback extends the ball, we got to start moving downhill. We got to have our eyes on that running back, and it affects their decision-making and judgment.
Where do you stand on paying today's NFL running back, and specifically Zeke Elliott?
It's a very, very tough question, because we know that passing is more efficient than rushing, and the gap is growing. It's more efficient today than it was last year. It's going to be more efficient next year than it was today to pass the football. It's not the running back's fault in any stretch. They're better, more skilled, more athletic than they used to be. But the rules have changed, and the way that offenses are adapting to those rules are allowing passes to have a very high completion rate, a lot of success, and, you know, yards after the catch, which raises the ceiling on passing plays and also increases the floor. And that's the biggest thing, is that floor being increased. With a higher completion rate, you aren't going to face as many incompletions, which gain no yardage. Those make passing plays much more efficient. Run plays are tricky, because the running back is always going to be valuable. But what we're finding is that even passing to running backs on early downs is more efficient than handing the ball off to them. When you get a running back like Zeke out in the perimeter in space, and he gets to catch the ball and heads up, see the one guy who's coming to tackle and in space and can make a move on that guy, that is far more beneficial to your offense than handing the ball off to him, you know, 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage, having him work to the line of scrimmage, navigate through the linemen, through the defensive line and linebackers that are trying to fill. So, you know, Zeke is one of the best, if not the best probably, in the NFL at being able to run the football on the ground. That said, passing to him is very efficient. So there's times that running backs are valuable. That's in short yardage situations and inside the red zone. Spread the defense out and run the football. But the problem with trying to separate out Zeke versus, you know, what does Zeke himself bring to the team is that you've got the best offensive line in football. You know, you had some injuries last year. It wasn't quite the same, but they've spent a lot of time and effort building that line. They've invested a lot of money into it. It was the most expensive line in the NFL last year, most expensive in the NFL this year. It's a very good line. Most running backs are going to have success behind that line. And what would Zeke look like if he wasn't running behind that line? He's still going to be arguably the best in the NFL as a running back, but what would his replacement value be? What would the drop-off be from a number two guy who's more skilled than like a pure backup who will never do anything in a league, but a slightly number two guy who could then run behind that line? I mean, what is the exact drop-off you're going to see? A couple plays a game, maybe that could decide it, but is it worth that money such that you're handicapping other positions and now maybe we can't pay our offensive line as much as we are? And the argument that I go back to, if we're going to argue who is replaceable in the league, the two most productive running backs from the 2017 season from a fantasy stats perspective, and that sounds stupid to argue in a football perspective, but basically fantasy stats just compiling touchdowns and total yardage. Okay, so the two most productive backs of 2017 were Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley. And last season, the very next year, both had to be replaced. And in both situations, the backup who came in, C.J. Anderson, James Conner, outperformed from an efficiency perspective the numbers that that number one guy had earned the prior year. So I think it's very difficult to pay a running back a lot of money in today's game. And it's an unenviable situation that teams with stud running backs are in.
Warren Sharp, find him on Twitter, at Sharp Football. It's a great follow. Dak's very polarizing here. Where are you on Dak the player?
Great question. You know, for a little while, you had the question, what's his receiving talent? You know,
yeah.
Most quarterbacks need a tight end, a good, reliable tight end. Look at what, you know, some of these tight ends have done for a lot of developing quarterbacks in the league. Look no further than a neighbor of yours, Kansas City, to see what Travis Kelce brings to Patrick Mahomes. And so it's very difficult when you don't have that, like, number one guy that you can go to. And you know, obviously you've got Jason Witten back, but what's the upside in Jason Witten? He'll be at a spot, and he's dependable to catch the ball, but he's not going to do much after that. You know, you look at around the league at some of the other teams, they got a number one wide receiver. Now you guys do with Amari Cooper. Prior to that, you know, Dez really wasn't being as productive as he had been in years past. So, you know, I think the jury is slightly still out on what Dak Prescott is. And I think this year is really going to help be, you know, a defining moment for what the future of Dak Prescott is. New offensive coordinator, or play caller, rather, that you guys have down there. And in addition, you've got him on a true number one wide receiver for hopefully the full season. I'd like to see the Cowboys call plays a little bit more efficiently. It's always better for a quarterback to be in situations where they're able to pass the ball when the defense doesn't know you're passing the ball. So when you're in third and long, the defense knows you're passing. Mm-hmm. They pin their ears back, rush you. But if you're in third and short, third and medium, and you can throw passes, or you're in first down situations and you're throwing passes, those are opportune times to pass the ball. I hope they increase their first down pass rate. I'd like to see what Dak's statistics are when they do something like that. I'd like to see what Dak is able to bring to the game when he runs the ball a little bit more often, which is something very valuable that Dak adds to the table, especially inside of the red zone. It's frustrating to me as an analyst to see how infrequently they let Dak run the football down in the red zone. It's just a massive efficiency edge that your team has, and they absolutely need to use that more often as part of the entire package that Dak would bring to the table, because that's a unique skill set that he has and many other quarterbacks in the league do not. So the short answer, the jury is still out. I think this year will tell us, and I'm excited for the potential with what I see sort of developing for him this year.
Where do you see the Cowboys' ceiling, or where do you see them going this year?
Well, I think that they've got a very good team. You know, I think overall that defense, especially that secondary, is getting a little bit of years on them. The green is wearing off a little bit, and so I think they're going to be better moving forward. This was a good team last year. You know, this is overall, like, their offensive line fell off, but this was a pretty good team. But the concern was that 9 out of their 10 wins were by one score or less. And the Cowboys will never reach their ceiling, in my opinion. It's you're not going to be able to repeat. It's going to be very tough. I won't say never, because anything's possible, but it's going to be very difficult to repeat a 9-3 record in one score games. You absolutely must try to get out to leads faster in these games and not just let the other team hang around, because then anything can happen. The Cowboys absolutely must get out to leads in these games. Do you know, I don't know if you know this, but over the last 2 years, the Dallas Cowboys, when you guys have had the lead at halftime, you're 9-0. When you've trailed at halftime, you're 1-6.
Wow.
That's one of the most dramatic in the entire NFL. What we're seeing now is that when teams get out to leads at halftime, they're basically winning 80% of their games. Dallas cannot afford, because it makes the other team go into the bag of tricks at halftime, start coming up with new game plans. What are we going to change? What are we going to modify? We're trailing. This isn't working out for us. We're going to have to do more risky things, less efficient things to try to get back in this game. And you want a desperate coach who's not doing efficient things on the opposite side of the field as you. So you've got to get out to these leads. And too often Dallas is trying to establish the run, play it close, not make mistakes in the first half of games, instead of getting a more aggressive strategy out the gates to try to establish the lead. And if you establish the lead and not just establish the run, then you're going to have much better chances of winning games, and you can run Zeke more later in the game, and you can pound on these other teams, because you don't have to worry about them getting in the game. You're playing more of the clock rather than the scoreboard. But when you're in these close one-score games, you're playing the scoreboard and the clock, and you're playing your opponent, and there's just too many factors at play. So their ceiling is really high, but they're going to need to change some of their philosophical strategies in order to reach it this year.
Warren, this was amazing. Thank you so much. If you want to have a new school view on football, find out where your favorite sport is going, follow them at Sharp Football. The 2019 football preview, available on Amazon. Number one bestseller for 3 weeks on Amazon. Thank you, Warren. We look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.